Nerds. Today's episode is sponsored by NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast. Personal finance can feel like a pop quiz you didn't study for. This podcast is your study guide. On NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast, you'll hear from trusted journalists who explain the why behind major financial decisions. You'll get research-backed insights and clear pros and cons, whether you're planning a big purchase or just want to grow your wealth. Make your next financial move with confidence. Follow NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast on your favorite podcast app.
If you're the type of person who wants data, not assumptions, Prenuvo's whole body scan gives you a deep understanding of your health. Screen for over 500 conditions, including many cancers, autoimmune disorders, neurodegenerative diseases, and more. Add blood panels to test over 80 biomarkers, and you've got information about your body you may never have had before. Book your scan at Prenuvo.com. That's Prenuvo.com.
Presented by T-Mobile, the official wireless partner of Odyssey Sports. With an awesome network and great savings, there's never been a better time to join T-Mobile. Visit your neighborhood store to make the switch today.
Welcome to Sunday Take for April 13th, 2025. I'm your host, Blois Olson. We enter this weekend with the Minnesota legislature going on their Easter Passover break. That means they won't meet next week, but it also means they'll be back in their districts. What will they hear? Where will they go? What will they discuss? We'll talk about that with Senator Nick Frentz and Representative Dave Baker, a Democrat and Republican, respectively. We'll also begin to break down what are the issues other than the budget that could hold up this legislative session. The reality is, while budget is the dominant issue of the session, bonding and policy issues are sure to complicate the end of the session. And I'm still taking the over on whether or not they get done on time. May 19th is fast approaching, but June 30th, as we know, is the real deal deadline. And then my take this week, transparency equals trust. I hope you can sit back today, this Sunday, watch the Masters, enjoy the weather. And thanks for listening to Sunday Take. Grab your coffee. And when we come back, Senator Nick Frentz discusses the DFL's priorities as we come to the end of session. I'm Blois Olson. This is Sunday Take on News Talk 830 WCCO. We're back on Sunday Take. I'm your host, Blois Olson. My first guest this week is Senator Nick Frentz. He's from the North Mankato area. He's part of Senate leadership. He's a Democrat, and he joins me now. Senator Frentz, thanks for joining me.
Thanks, Blois. Good to hear from you.
Well, you know, if we reflect back quickly on, you know, the beginning of session was awkward at best, maybe a tie here, a missing seat in the House, some other folks there. But, you know, on both the House and the Senate side, there seems to be good progress on the budget. This is a budget session. There's targets from the House. There's targets from the Senate. The governor's got his supplemental budget and his adjustments to his full budget. Where's Nick Frentz think this budget discussion is? Is there more progress, less progress, or about what you thought where you'd be this point in the session?
That's what I think most Minnesotans are asking, and I think we're now on course to finish on time if there are no surprises. We were a little bit behind, of course, as the House got organized. But if you look at the timing of the budget targets, the Senate and House have now put them out. They are not the same, but if we have reasonable progress on compromise during the end of session negotiating, I think we can finish on May 19th.
And when you say that, there's still a lot of uncertainty. Is there just kind of an acknowledgement that we're not going to use the rainy day fund now, and the uncertainty and potential for federal cuts mean that it's likely the legislature might have to come back and make some adjustments, use some of that rainy day fund? Should federal funds not make it through?
Yeah, I think that's exactly right. We're going to budget for Minnesotans as if we already understand the federal cuts that are coming. If there are more federal cuts before May 19th, we'll have to take those into account, sure. But assuming it looks about like it does now, we'll pass the state budget on May 19th. And your listeners may have an opinion about how likely more serious cuts are from the federal government after we adjourn. And if they do, we'll most likely have to come back. Whether the rainy day reserve is part of that or not, we'll have to see.
as you look at the other issues, bonding is one of them. There's been a lot of kind of promotion of a bonding bill, but with a tie in the House and a divided Senate by just a couple votes, you didn't bond last year. Is there momentum, or will it have to come together at the very end?
There's momentum at $700 million. I would be supportive of a larger bonding bill. For those that don't follow this closely, the problem when the legislature doesn't deliver a bonding bill is costs go up for your city, your county, and your state. These projects don't get less expensive. They get more. There is general agreement that we'll do a standalone bonding bill. But as you know, even with the best of intentions, bonding bills have failed in other years, often when one of the four caucuses says something like, put up the votes for bonding, which is necessary because it requires a supermajority. Folks, that's 3/5 in each, the House and Senate. But they tend to say things like, we'll put those votes up if you do this other thing that we know your members don't want to do. And as I said last year, there's nothing wrong with negotiating. Blois, you know me. I love to get in there and negotiate. Having said that, when you tie something the people want to something some people don't want, you make it more likely that nothing gets done. And that's exactly what happened to the bonding bill last year. If we don't pass one this year, small communities, large communities, and Minnesotans are going to pay.
Senator Frantz, as you look at that bonding bill, you look at those other issues, even within your own caucus, you know, the likelihood of new revenue is going to be hard. Republicans are going to be dug in on any new fees or taxes. The governor's trying to, you know, flatten the sales tax but expand it a little. People in your own caucus are proposing new revenue. Is new revenue even, you know, part of the end game right now, or is it realistic to think that you guys have your targets and it's going to be really hard to add anything to those targets?
Well, first of all, the targets in the House and Senate are quite a ways apart. As folks may know, we have to balance the budget in the first 2 years. So the budget forecast says, here's what it looks like, whether you increase revenue, decrease revenue, expenses, whatever. We show the public the second 2 years. For us right now, Blois, that's the 28-29 budget year. And what it shows is a significant deficit. The House targets do not propose to balance that second group of 2 years and actually would have us come back in a $1.3 billion deficit. The Senate is not excited about that and has proposed we balance, as has the governor. For new revenue, then the question is, if we generally don't want to raise taxes, and we generally don't, what are the pathways? And as cuts that are necessary to balance the budget in the 2 years and 4 year period become more clear and that pain becomes more evident, I think you'll see a little bit of give on new revenue. An example of that is that even though some of us, including me and the Blue Dog Coalition, are not excited about new revenue, the Senate targets reflect about $350 million of new revenue in the next biennium. For comparison, folks, that's against about a $67 billion 2 year budget.
Where do Senate Democrats propose that new revenue comes from?
It isn't designated. Great question. Great investigative reporting by you. The budget target simply gives the tax committee that number and does not say in the targets where it might be. And as you know, there are many proposals in the tax committee in both the House and Senate, which would raise revenue, each one with its own spirit and independence.
Spirit and independence. Isn't that the tenor that we're going to run into with these closely divided bodies? Let's pivot, Senator Frantz, to just some of the policy issues. There was a lot passed 2 years ago when Democrats had control of the House, the Senate, and the governor's office. Some of those issues that are out there, Republicans want to say in. They feel like they were totally left out of the discussion. We don't need to relive history, but, you know, you look at certain things that the administration has, you know, had a challenge rolling out, like cannabis or things like that. Are there places where the legislature, as a, you know, co-equal branch of government, needs to say to the administration, we need to tweak this policy. We might not have gotten it right, or we might need to streamline something going forward.
I do think there are. And I think Minnesotans expect us to constantly look at programs, whether they have begun or are about to begin, and say, with the information we have right now, not what we had in May of 2023, but what we have right now, are there changes we want to make? Changes in our state include, it's 2 years later, changes in what we expect from the federal government, changes in how programs that have already rolled out have experienced strengths and weaknesses. A couple examples would be We have earned sick and safe time. There are employers asking questions. Do we need to tweak that or turn the dials? I think we owe it to have that discussion. Same for paid family and medical leave. Democrat U.S. Senator, former House leader Adam Schiff said over the weekend on Meet the Press, we should be doing everything we can to help our small businesses. That's a note I hope other Democrats will join me in sounding. And there are many other programs around. You mentioned cannabis, where we, of course, want it to roll out successfully. But we have a duty to keep looking, just like a family would keep looking at the way they do things to see if it can be done better, more efficiently, or to eliminate redundancies. And one last note, Blois, there is a proposal led by Senator Heather Gustafson for an inspector general that would help look for efficiency, try to root out any fraud and waste, try to catch criminals when they steal from the public. I think that's a good idea.
Okay, you brought it up, the inspector general idea, fraud, waste, abuse. Look, the headlines are the headlines. The facts are the facts. There has been a lot of fraud, not just Feeding Our Future, within government. Just this past week, two individuals were charged on fraud. As a lawyer, as a legislator, when you see that in the administration, regardless of party, what is it that you believe Minnesotans could start to feel confident about, that their tax dollars are being used more wisely, that fraud isn't as prevalent? Because, you know, it's undeniable. I mean, the legislative auditor has said it. Former U.S. Attorney Andy Lugar has said it. Minnesota has a fraud problem. But having one bill is one thing. Having urgency to solve it within the administration is something that I think Minnesotans are feeling maybe isn't out there. Can the legislature push that urgency?
I think we can. And I think you're right. The public reacts to what it hears, sees, and feels. The headlines about people stealing from the government. And to be clear, people that steal from the government, they commit fraud, they're stealing from our friends and neighbors. Those are taxpayer dollars. So I think there's an urgency that's understood by a lot of legislators to address it. In the same way, the individual cities try to address crime trends. Sometimes crime is up. Glad to see crime down in our largest cities. That, I think, is through an understanding of the public that we have urgency to address it. And I think we have the same obligation at all times to say, what are the ways we could be more efficient? It's a lot like humanity itself. It's the 3% of humans that are willing to steal, commit crimes, commit fraud that we have to watch for. And the fact that 97% of the public are law-abiding, honest citizens does not relieve the state government, the legislature, and the administration from asking how can we minimize, if not eliminate, people stealing from us.
One of the other policy issues that I know has been talked about, I know your colleague, Senator Grant Housechild, is focused on it. I know you've worked on it, is permitting reform. Does that have a path this session? It's been talked about since the Dayton administration, maybe even the Plenty administration. But it seems to just continue to kind of like take nibbles at it rather than, you know, major reform. And frankly, with state by state issues and jobs and how to be competitive in this unknown economy going forward, it is one of the certainties that I think a lot of business owners, as you know, talk about is, why can't we just finally get this done? Does that have a lane this session?
It does. You may know, Blois, this week, the permitting reform bill of Senator Housechild was included in the Senate Environment Omnibus Bill, which did pass out of committee yesterday. I actually talked to Chair Fong Hur, the excellent chair of that committee, and he was glad that language was included. That's not the final leg of that journey, but you're exactly right. We want to have reasonable, efficient permitting. You may remember last year I was the chief author of the Clean Energy Permitting Bill in my capacity as the Senate Energy Chair. We got that passed. Minnesotans want us to have permitting that's reasonable, that allows for environmental review, but is not unduly lengthy, burdensome, or sends the wrong signal to businesses that want to come to the state. Back to my comment, we have to do what we can to help our small businesses. Many of them are struggling.
On Friday, Senate Republicans filed an ethics complaint against Senate President Bobby Joe Champion. Is that going to be a distraction here at the end of the session, or do you think it could be cleared up pretty quickly?
I would think it would be cleared up pretty quickly, although I don't want to speak for Senator Sandy Pappas, who is now the chair of the Subcommittee on Ethics in the Senate. I actually brought the motion. I sit on the Senate Rules Committee for part of my work in leadership and made the motion to have Senator Champion give way to Senator Pappas. So it'll be on her plate, like she has nothing else to do. She's a bonding chair. But I would guess it is a straightforward set of facts, like the public and the ethics committee, they can see what has happened. And I would think it could be moved relatively quickly. Famous last words, as you know, at the legislature, when someone says, I think we can get this done quickly, and a decade later, they're saying, well, I thought it would be quick.
My guest is Senator Nick Frentz. He's from North Mankato. He's in DFL leadership. As you look at the landscape, there's, I call them shiny object bills, other things out there. Are there other issues you think you hear from the public that maybe, you know, are impacting their community that they're very worried about, especially with the federal uncertainty right now?
Yes. And here's where humans are entitled to be human. People are worried about cuts. If they, for example, have a disabled child who receives support from the state and there's proposals out there that might affect the funding for the care providers, they're worried about that. If they see local government aid proposals that would reduce the money the state sends to their city, they're worried how it will affect police and fire and the services the city provide. People are worried about budgetary concerns at the federal level and at the state level, causing them to go backwards. And at a time when some Minnesotans are struggling to make ends meet, where inflation is still 2.5%, 3%, I think that's their main worry. That is manifested many times over in the possibilities in the state budget. And I've said to you, Blois, many times, the best part of the Minnesota state budgeting process is also the hardest part. It must balance. And we hear from Minnesotans, dozens, sometimes hundreds a day at the Capitol, who point out what funding cuts will mean to the area of Minnesota that they work in and love. What is much harder to find is proposals from people to say, and here's where we should cut.
You bring that up, and we'll end there. But I want to focus there, because there was a lot of one-time money in the last budget. There was an $18 billion surplus. Are Democrats capable of saying no to some of their constituency groups? And how's that going to feel this year when the number is smaller?
Well, this Democrat is capable of saying no. You only need to look on social media to see a couple Senator Frentz knows. But never mind that right now, folks. Yes. I think our obligation to balance the budget requires us to say to constituencies, including constituencies that tend to support more one party or another, we have to make cuts and we need you to make shared sacrifice. I chair the Legislative Pension Commission. And in 2018, with the leadership of Republican Senator Julie Rosen, we went to a bunch of Minnesotans and said, if we're going to shore up these pensions and protect the promises we made to future retirees, we're going to have to make some cuts. And through a stakeholder process, we did that. And I think we'll be able to do that in St. Paul this year. As always, though, it only takes a small number of legislators in a closely divided House of Senate to muck it up. Keep an eye on the conference committee process. The House is tied, but that does not mean the House has any more voice than the Senate. And I hope the legislature keeps a reasonable distance from the governor and the administration and the budgeting process for this reason, Blois. The way the system works best, the House comes to its conclusions, the Senate comes to its conclusions, they get together, negotiate to the middle, and then send it to the governor. We do work with the governor. You know I'm from the Mankato area where Governor Walz is from, but the process is legislature makes budget decisions, governor signs it or doesn't sign it. That will serve Minnesotans best if we keep that framework. I think we can do it, and really looking forward to it. It's an honor to serve.
Senator Nick Frentz, thanks for joining me on the Sunday Take. I know we'll talk down the line.
Thank you, Blois. Thanks, everybody. Have a good week.
When we come back, Representative Dave Baker, the Republican perspective from the House. I'm Blois Olson. This is Sunday Take on News Talk 830 WCCO.
My final guest this week on Sunday Take is Representative Dave Baker. He's a longtime House member. He's from the Willmar area. He's chairing the Workforce Jobs Committee, co-chair. And he joins me now on Sunday Take. Representative Baker, thanks for being here.
It's great to be here, Blois. Thank you so much.
We're entering the Easter Passover break. Obviously, the start of this session was awkward and odd with the tie that wasn't a tie and DFLers not showing up. It seems as though committee work has been kind of cooking along in earnest here. How do you feel about the progress you've made since you've had the entire body meeting?
I think that our committee work has been pretty productive. I think that when I had the gavel solely for the first 4 or 5 weeks before the final resolution was known for the Roseville seat, I think that we are, again, having very robust meetings. We were having Democrat bills brought forward, Republican bills. And then when my co-chair, Representative Dave Pinto, came into the co-chairmanship, we've been actually working very well together back and forth to continue that three days a week, every Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, 8:15 a.m., and we're really plugging along to make sure that we get as many bills heard as possible. What I think we kind of agreed to was not wasting a lot of our time, because we did lose a lot of time with that first 3 weeks of not really kind of getting our more bills heard. Being a chair with a co-chair is a challenging opportunity here. I think, again, we can say it's nice to finally have the voters really wanting us to work together. We obviously have to do that. We can't pass anything without that 68th vote off the floor or an eight vote member to get it out of our committee. So it's easier said than done. And I think that we've done a good job. We've had a lot of hard conversations in our committees. Overall, right now, I think we're at a good place. However, we are stalled in the workforce committee with two main policy issues that we are stuck on. We have sent it up to leadership. So Speaker Damoth and Leader Hortman are going to kind of help us work through this. And we don't have a clear answer on these two very important policies that will get us to hopefully work on a budget for the Workforce Labor Committee.
What are those two issues that are going to require kind of a bigger compromise or more work?
Yeah, so our committee is very stuck on a non-compete clause that passed 2 years ago that was a complete ban of all non-competes in the state of Minnesota. I completely don't agree with how that was handled in a one full swoop. I understand it for salary levels under, say, $100,000, $120,000 and under. What's going to hurt this is if we don't get our research and development non-competes with really high-level trade secrets, some research and development, you won't have companies doing any of this in Minnesota if we don't get a bill through this that was actually brought to us by Representative Niska, very crafted very well to get to that high level of R&D. That's the one bill that we got to have too, so that's very important. The second one is the Nursing Home Standards Board that was, again, created 2 years ago to kind of oversee all the nursing homes and how they pay and do benefits, and it's another layer of things that those nursing homes are already really challenged with. The makeup of this board is three of the agencies, which is, again, the government appointees, three labor positions, which is labor, the unions, and then three employer positions. Right now, there's no balance, so labor and agencies can vote everything through as they've done so far. The employers, their voices have been unified, but they always just are getting run over. Our idea is basically you have to have a majority of each one of those groups to move something out of that committee to execute rules that affect all nursing homes in the state of Minnesota. So we think that's a very important part of balancing this power sharing thing out so that the next governor, whether it's Republican, if it's a Republican governor, they could change that on a dime and flip it over. So I think it's just good long-term planning to share that positions of power so that when a good idea comes forward, you have to have support from any of those groups.
When you think about those policy items, but then it's a budget year, and obviously there was an $18 billion surplus. We don't need to relive the movie, but the economy is what it is. The forecast is what it is, and the federal government uncertainty is what it is. How do you feel, or how does your caucus feel about solving the budget or the financial picture, which is, you know, needs to be done by June 30th?
So I think we've all said that we all know we have to pass a budget. And I think that when you just say that, that's one thing. Republicans, because we've been so stymied in the last 2 years of not having our voice heard from Governor Walz to leadership in both the Senate and the House, we have a lot of pent up concerns that policy has got to be a part of this budget conversation going forward. They passed so many sweeping regulations, again, in workforce things like paid family medical leave and ESST. Again, those benefits are worthwhile benefits to talk about. Those are things that we can actually get together on and find ways to recognize how small businesses are the smallest members in those areas. They have to have a different exclusion or a relief for those in these massive 12 weeks off or up to 20 weeks off for paid family. It's different for those folks. You also have a lot of collective bargaining agreements here, Blois, that have negotiated over the years high levels of PTO time just for this reason, to have bankable time for family leaves and medical leaves. Well, this is going to pile on top of those collective bargaining agreements, and we need to make sure that there's relief valves so that counties and school districts can have a way to, like, before this call goes in, can they negotiate? Do they want to be part of this or not? So there's just very large pieces of budget that are important, but these other pieces of policy cannot go without the budget. Otherwise, the leverage, frankly, is gone, and we aren't going to let those all kind of go out without having some real solid policy discussions this year.
My guest is Representative Dave Baker. He's a Republican House member from the Willmar area. Chairs the Jobs and Workforce Committee, co-chairs it with Representative Dave Pinto. And we're talking about now, we're at the Easter Passover break. Legislators will be going back to their districts, so they'll have a week off, and we'll kind of reset where we're headed with this budget. Representative Baker, one of the things you just talked about is this pent-up issue over policy. I think when you look at the tradition of the budget year, the budget becomes a sticking point. The brinksmanship and kind of stare down, as I see it, was going to be financial. How much input, how much openness, not just maybe from leadership of the DFL, but from members, either your own co-chair or others, just to see where they understand, you bring up just a few issues, earned safe and sick time, paid family medical leave, the nursing home board, do they understand that some of these ideas do need tweaks, or are they dug in?
Well, what I'm seeing so far is the DFL in the Minnesota House are really, really dug in. I think that their messaging from their leadership has been very clear. We are not here to talk about policy, period. We are to send a budget through, and that is it. I think if they found that this would be a successful session, they would not change a single thing that they did in the last 2 years. I think quietly and privately, there's a number of members in maybe purple districts that also understand in the Democrat side that there needs to be a conversation about small businesses around paid family. Or, again, school districts are really seeing the world of hurt. They don't have the money for this new unemployment insurance in the summertime for hourly employees, or they don't have the money for paid family in the schools. How are we going to do that? There are cracks in the House, but they are not going to be that 68th vote yet. Until they feel like they've got some coverage from their leadership. I am seeing a lot more openness and collaboration from the DFL and the Senate side, working with me on some really reasonable things that they felt they actually did go too far in 2023. I think more moderate Democrats are actually not afraid to stand up and work with us, and I'm looking forward to hopefully more of that with the Minnesota House.
Is there an acknowledgement within your own caucus of Republicans that the federal cuts may cause the state to either tap into the rainy day fund or legislature to have to come back and try to figure some things out before next session, just based on, if there are major federal cuts in social service programs or something like that?
Yeah, I mean, we hear the news. We see what's going on. I mean, it is a... Obviously, in the federal side, it's transformational there for sure right now, with just all the chaos and the moving parts right now. We are aware of that. We are focused on trying to know what we have in front of us today. I think we're all ready to be deployed here back this summer if we have to, or this fall if there's some major changes to federal funding. We see it. We're not ignoring it. The DFL colleagues, again, talk about this almost every day in committee, about how horrible things are on a federal level and how we shouldn't be doing this or that. I understand that. I understand citizens are fearful and they're unsure about what this is. But again, I think a lot of us believe that this change was asked for through the last election. We have to live through some very uncomfortable moments here to get through this. I think that, again, we stand ready as Republicans to kind of work with whatever budget constraints we're going to have, because that's our job. We have to understand the statewide budget. If the feds are going to change a lot of things after we're adjourned, I know we're going to be ready to come back with our leadership support. And if that's what we need to do, we'll be ready to do that.
What are the other policy issues outside of business policy that your caucus is really focused on making sure either get adjusted or modified in some way?
Well, again, we understand that this year we still are half of the leg of the three-legged stool with the Minnesota House. You know, the school funding, the unfunded mandates to school is a huge issue for us. All the spending that went out, and now the money is not there anymore for the free lunches, for the, again, upcoming paid family medical leave, the unemployment insurance. A lot of discussion about how much do we want to pay for illegal residents in Minnesota here for health care. Is that something that we can do and have to do, because we don't have the money to do that going forward as well. I think there's some major issues in each one of the committees that are established. Some are getting through them and some are not. It's cutting budgets in other areas that they've always gotten a lot of agency dollars. We're trying to give them all sort of some haircuts because we are underfunded now. We are out of money and we're $6 billion in the hole looking ahead. So we've got to make some serious discussions about that. But we also know we can't really move the needle a whole lot, we don't think, on the abortion issue. That is something that we understand. We should talk about the length of it and to the ninth month. And there's some real issues that we want to talk about. We also just know, though, that the makeup around here is something that we have to understand. We're at a 67 tie in the Minnesota House, and we have to work through the areas that we can work through. That's why I'm focused on paid family, because it actually hasn't gone out the door yet. So we still have time to kind of fix something like that.
As you get down to the end of this session, you've seen a few of these sessions. Last session did not end smoothly. Is there confidence that because of the tie in the House that there's no choice but to try to find a smooth lane to land this plane?
That is the reality. I think our leadership, and I give actually Damoth and Hortman a lot of credit for pulling together a joint House budget target pretty early so we could come together there. I do think that they're honestly trying to get us out of here on time. I am concerned that the large amount of policy items that are out there, again, the massiveness of what the changes were 2 years ago, if they can convince a majority of each one of their parties, their caucuses, to do this, that'll be the challenge. And I think that they are going to have the hardest challenge of anybody here are the leaders keeping their caucuses sort of organized and sort of at least getting out of here with some reasonable stuff. There will be opposition to final bills on both sides of the aisle. I guess that's what this balance is probably going to come to at the end. It wouldn't surprise me if we had to go into extra innings. With what's in front of us, this pent-up anxiety that Republicans have, the lack of dollars, working with a governor that hasn't really been engaged too much with our party anyway for the last several years. We'll see how this all kind of lands at the end. But nobody wants to see a state shutdown, but we must have reasonable and honest conversations about policy alongside of this budget reconciliation. So I am trusting our leadership has a pathway to get us there, and we're ready to work alongside of them.
Dave Baker, I know we'll talk down the line. Thanks for joining me on Sunday Take.
You bet. Thanks, Blyce.
When we come back, this week's take, legislature has a week off. What should you tell them when they're at home? I'm Blyce Olson. This is Sunday Take on News Talk 830 WCCO.
We're back on Sunday Take. But first, before we get to this week's take, we have a message from Minnesota's hospitals. Did you know that one way or another, Medicaid supports all of us in Minnesota? It's the largest source of federal health funding that Minnesota hospitals rely on to keep their doors open. It's a critical program, and it faces unprecedented threats that would strip healthcare from vulnerable Minnesotans, devastate our healthcare system, and shift massive costs to our state. We must protect Medicaid's promise of healthcare access for all Minnesotans, regardless of income, age, or health status. Minnesota hospitals want you to learn more at protectmnpatients.org. That's protect, mnpatients.org, a message from Minnesota hospitals. You know, one of the things I write about and talk about regularly is transparency in government. It is something that it feels we are now fighting or defending. When we don't like changes in government and they're transparent, we're offended. But when changes happen or issues happen and we don't hear about them, we're very defensive. This week's take is really about that. A recording emerged this week from the Center for the American Experiment that was a piece of evidence in the Feeding Our Future trial. The recording has Attorney General Keith Ellison discussing the work of agencies to try to stop fraud on certain children's food programs. He downplays the issue and the severity with the crowd. He says even Governor Walz is with him, that this is minor. We later learned that it wasn't minor. In fact, we later learned that over $250 million had been stolen in the name of kids' nutrition. We could go through all the facts of the case, but that's been rehashed. One of the issues in state government at all levels, from the legislature to the constitutional officers, is transparency. The governor's office, oftentimes not transparent about his public schedule or who he's meeting with. Legislators, not often transparent about who and how they operate. They contend that their emails should not be subject to data practice because it would show the constituents that are asking them about issues. But the House Republicans have pushed forward twice now with a bill that would add transparency to the Attorney General's office. Attorney General Ellison, who has built a strong reputation on consumer issues, also has outside partners, also traveled to South America and we didn't, or South Africa, and we didn't know it. It was paid for by a law firm. CNN reported it, but local press, other than Lunch Take, didn't really touch it. And now we have this recording from his office that was evidence in a court case. And now Fox 9 and Care 11 are asking questions as well. Look, it is a gotcha world out there, but it's more likely to feel like a gotcha world if you're not transparent in the first place. My mantra with clients, my mantra in writing is that transparency equals trust. And as we move forward, we all know that we need more trust in our government, whether you're a Democrat or Republican or an independent. So, DFLers, consider that bill that Republicans are pushing forward. Try to add some more transparency to the Attorney General's office. And while you're at it, add some transparency to yourselves and others. I'm Blois Tolson. That's the Sunday Take. Enjoy the Masters. Corzo's up next. Will the Wild limp into the playoffs? That's the big question. And will the Timberwolves have a play-in game? Corzo, take it away.
Nerds. Today's episode is sponsored by NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast. Personal finance can feel like a pop quiz you didn't study for. This podcast is your study guide. On NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast, you'll hear from trusted journalists who explain the why behind major financial decisions. You'll get research-backed insights and clear pros and cons, whether you're planning a big purchase or just want to grow your wealth. Make your next financial move with confidence. Follow NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast on your favorite podcast app.
Here's something you may not know. Only 14% of cancers in the U.S. are caught through routine screenings. Prenuvo's whole body MRI may help close that gap. Screening for over 500 conditions, including most solid tumors, all in under an hour. Prenuvo's body panels also test over 80 biomarkers for a deeper understanding of your health. No radiation, no contrast. Book your scan at prenuvo.com. That's prenuvo.com.
Presented by T-Mobile, the official wireless partner of Odyssey Sports. With an awesome network and great savings, there's never been a better time to join T-Mobile. Visit your neighborhood store to make the switch today.
Did you know that there are over 200 legends like Andrew Jones? Albert Pujols, Felix Hernandez, and Ken Griffey Jr. in MLB The Show 26. Collect them all and current all-stars to build your perfect lineup. MLB The Show 26 is available now on PlayStation 5, Xbox Series XS, and Nintendo Switch. Rated E for everyone. Officially licensed by MLB Players, Inc.
Girl, let's get real. Some pads are just diapers with a good PR team, but not the new Kotex BioCare. That's because Kotex BioCare helps defend against odor and irritants. And it's the first and only pad with this pH proactive system that helps optimize the pad's pH. Just think of it as self-care for down there. Check out Kotex.com for more details on the all-new Kotex, completely redesigned to meet your needs. You asked, we heard.
Nerds.
Today's episode is sponsored by NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast. Ever Google a money question and end up 12 tabs deep with 12 different answers? This podcast is your shortcut back to clarity. NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast breaks down financial decisions with a team of trusted journalists. They explain the why behind decisions like investing, home buying, and choosing credit cards with clear, research-backed insights. No jargon, no misinformation. Make your next financial move with confidence. Follow NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast on your favorite podcast app.
What you're listening to presumably doesn't suck, so neither should your sound system. Sonos lets you listen seamlessly from room to room. Same great sound, expertly tuned, astonishingly clear. It's not magic, but it's not not magic.
Presented by T-Mobile, the official wireless partner of Odyssey Sports. With an awesome network and great savings, there's never been a better time to join T-Mobile. Visit your neighborhood store to make the switch today.
Diamond Dynasty has all new Red Diamond cards and World Baseball Classic content in MLB The Show 26. Collect your favorites and compete against the best. MLB The Show 26 is available now on PlayStation 5, Xbox Series XS, and Nintendo Switch. Rated E for everyone. Officially licensed by MLB Players, Inc.